every room you walk into, you have a sphere around you that is walking in with you. And it's grabbing people, ideas, thoughts, and it's touching everything around you. We can develop the same attachment issues with non-human things, progress, notoriety, trophies, reputation, money, bank accounts. And so when we develop attachment issues with, how dangerous would it be if we're anxious attachment with progress? Now, all of a sudden, we're like, if I don't see it right away, I got to run. I got to hide.
What if you could build a business in the modern world as big or as small as you want without having to compromise the things that were the most important to you in the very beginning? This is the Wealthy Consultant Talks podcast with Taylor Welch and Mike Walker, as they share with you today their learning lessons from stories and their experiences over the past 10 to 15 years, and share with you right here, right now. Let's get into it.
We're going to go through week three today, and this is probably my favorite of all four of them. Just FYI. Here is why it's my favorite. There's a lot of good material in this workbook, and I would recommend reading it more than once just to kind of get it in you. But when it comes to the reason that high performers, and I'm using high performers broadly and loosely, if you are somebody who wants to do things in your life that your family has not done before, if you want to do things in your life that you have not grown up around, if you have big goals for yourself personally that matter to you, then I would call you a high performance thinker. And then if you pair that with, if you have the discipline ready that you are willing to sacrifice for what you have set out to achieve, then you're a high performance operator. So you're thinking and operating, they're slightly different, because a high performance thinker is going to think like a high performer. But how many of you know you have to have the activities that back up or substantiate the goals that are set in the minds? Yeah. We've all met people who think big and they talk a big game and they announce everything they're doing on social media before they've even started it. And they are just not where they want to be because they think and talk big, but they don't do big. These are the people who set a New Year's goal to do X, Y, Z. And by January 11th, they're done. Just couldn't hack it. Yeah. Couldn't hang it. It's not that high performance operators nail everything the first time. It's just that they keep going until they nail it. They don't quit 11 days in. They allow themselves to have a margin of evolution to grow into their goals. But if there's a linchpin that causes high performers to fail, it would be this lesson. It would be week three of this challenge, because I myself have gotten trapped here, where I'm placing such a high importance on the things that I want, and it betrays you. Now, this is where the self-help community has done a massive disservice to the people that they're trying to help, and it's no harm, no foul. When you read books like Think and Grow Rich, you have to understand that they didn't have consciousness studies. They didn't have millions of dollars going into measuring energy transference. They didn't understand quantum mechanics or quantum physics. They didn't have the research base that we do today. And so they would think a thing and they would talk about it and it would work randomly, and then they would call it a rule. But then we learned through testing that all of the studies coming from quantum are not rules, they're theories. There are no laws in quantum. And so we've gotten more and more and more diligent in how we track what is it that causes somebody to do something big. What is it that causes somebody to feel imposter syndrome? What is it that causes somebody to have fear and insecurity in their central nervous system, and how do they get it out? And so when you look at the self-help community and the teachers at large, what they teach largely is this, like, it has to be the burning desire, right? If they have a burning desire for something. The problem with burning desire is science, research. The problem is it backfires. It works at first because it triggers dopamine. And when we get dopamine, we're like, oh my God, this is working. This is amazing. I feel so expectant and so excited. And I feel. But then the high performance thinker gets trapped because they don't ever transition to a high performance what?
Doer
or operator. They can't make the feeling transition into the doing. And the reason is complicated, and we're going to go through and study it today. Does that sound good? You want me to change gears and we talk about trading? Because today was a beautiful day in the markets, a beautiful day in the markets. I mean, Tesla's crushing, futures are crushing.
I know, bro. That's a different channel, bro.
Different.
These people are ready to go.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. When you want to talk about why traders fail, they fail for the same reason that entrepreneurs fail in consulting and why software business all comes down to this right here. The importance factor is too high. All right, let's roll through this just for a little bit. The more desperately you want something, the harder it is to get it. This has been taught incorrectly by the self-help community. The mechanics of your mind are trained to look for both what you want and what you don't want. So if you are familiar with belief architecture, you'll see some of this calling back to the reticular activating system. We won't go deep into that today. By the way, the belief architecture event in August is 2 full days and it's 60% brand new material. So if you've been to the last one, you need to come to this one. There are no recordings. You have to be there live. I'm sorry. I respect the front runners of self-development as much as anyone else, but they didn't have the tools. That's what we were talking about, to examine the third, fourth, and fifth order consequences. Now, what is the third, fourth, and fifth order consequence? Let's pop quiz the entire room for a second. What is a third order consequence? Leo, man, let's go.
The consequence after the second one.
Beautifully said. Beautifully said. A really fast cursory overview of this. Let's just go into first order consequence of you waking up really, really early and going to the gym. What's the first order consequence for this for most people?
You're getting in.
Yeah. Well, it's the consequence is you're tired. And
I was going to say there is a consequence of being tired. Yeah.
It takes more energy. So you're tired. You don't want to get up. So you have to use a bit of discipline to do that. So you're starting the day at a deficit on energy because discipline requires an immense amount of energy. It's ridiculous how much energy discipline, just adherence to a decision, can consume from the glucose of the brain. And so the first sort of consequence of waking up early, going to the gym, they're not very good. Like the first sort of consequences are pretty rough. Like how many of you would show up to a course and said guaranteed less energy, more fatigue, and $50, sign up for it. Nobody would sign up for that.
Yeah.
But the second order consequence is almost always opposite of the first. So the second order consequence of waking up on time, going to the gym, is you feel better about yourself. Your self-esteem improves. Why does self-esteem improve? Well, we have other courses on this because value adherence builds self-esteem. You get stronger. Your immune system gets better and all of these things. Now, flip that and go into the first order consequence of sleeping in and eating pancakes for breakfast. I got nothing against pancakes, but let's just go with it. It feels really good.
Oh, man. Feels real good, right?
Our backload is great.
Mm.
And you have so much dopamine in pancakes and syrup. There's a ton of it. And then you feel bad and you start losing long-term energy. So the brain is just crazy and how it will prioritize sometimes first order consequence at the expense of the second. And so because these guys did not understand the second, third, fourth, fifth order consequence, they were tracking everything from the first order consequence. And when you set a big goal and you want it more than anything else in your life and you're setting out to accomplish it, you feel really good. You feel amazing. You are amped up. You are fired up. I mean, we've seen this 1,000 times. People will come into one of our programs. They'll get clarity sometimes for the first time in a long time and they feel amazing afterwards. And then 3 days later, what happens?
Boom.
Hit the wall.
Crashing into a brick wall. They're no longer excited about it. And the reason is not because I'm not saying you shouldn't feel excited. I'm saying that they didn't understand how long-term motivation works. So they sacrifice long-term motivation to protect short-term motivation. And we're going to get into that today. But to do that, we sort of have to go through attachment theories. And I don't know if you've ever studied attachment theories. If you're married, it will be really good to have a basic understanding of attachment theory because you and your spouse fall into one of these four categories and it can hurt you if you don't understand it. So first we have secure attachment. These are the people who are emotionally available, responsive. They're free from drama. Oh my, thank you God. They have no drama in their lives. They don't participate in drama, but they have healthy boundaries. And so they're willing to set boundaries without fearing that they're going to offend people. This is where we all want to get to. Anxious attachment. Anxious attachment, these people are hypersensitive to signs of rejection. What they require from others is often more than what they are able to give in return. So how many of you have a friend who, if you don't text them back in 30 seconds, they think something's wrong with the relationship. They think you don't care. How many of you have parents who are like this, or people close to you, clients who are like this? These people just make you feel anxious. They kind of make you feel weirded out. Like, if my whole world doesn't revolve around you, you're going to have an aneurysm. These are anxious attachment people. And the reason that they are anxious attachment is because they were rejected when they were young and they never got over it. So they have to grow through that. They need to come to a sacred timelines event and they need to fix their shit. Because until they do, they're going to repel everyone away. Avoidant attachment, okay? This is me. Just for the record, I'm an avoidant attachment person that is growing. And I'm being redeemed into secure attachment slowly but surely. These people are emotionally distant, shut down under stress. Avoidance is a protection mechanism as they struggle to express feelings when the stakes are too high. When someone gets too real, they're out, they're done. So this was really tough for me and Lindsay, because when we were first married, anytime my life would get more difficult, my protocols would just start running on autopilot. And I would start shutting down different things that required my effort. I would just distance myself from people. I'm not an extrovert. I'm not really an introvert either. I'm trying to grow out of that. But at the end of the day, when my life was difficult, I could just not see another human for years and be totally fine with it, because I felt safer when no humans were around. This is an avoidant attachment type of person. Make sense?
Yeah, attractive.
All right. And then we have fearful avoidant attachment. And these people are just confused. They fear both intimacy and abandonment. This creates a lot of volatility. So if you've ever had a friend or a relationship with somebody and they're like really good and really bad in the span of the same conversation, and you can't figure out what the heck they're like, are they mad? Are they ecstatic? They're volatile. And this person has been through trauma in their past and they tend to react chaotically whenever they're threatened. It'd probably be like a Donald Trump type figure, like just like, what is he doing? Mm-hmm. We don't know what he's doing. And no disrespect to the office of the president, but you've got to look at some people and just look, say, okay, this person is a freaking wild card.
Yeah.
Like, what are they going to say today? What are they going to do today? I have a friend who I used to work with who's extremely fearful of avoidant attachment. And we're no longer close. We'll put it that way. So this is 4 or 5 years ago. But one time he got on the phone with me and one of his friends had said something and he thought it came from me. And it didn't come from me. And I was just like not involved in the situation at all. And he said, if I ever hear this again, I'm the type of person who'll just burn your house down.
Yikes.
I said, hey, bro, if you mean that, I'm going to have to call the police right now. And he's like, oh, no. That is just a figure of speech. He's like, dude, you're one of my best friends. And I don't want you to ever feel like nervous about me. I just really, really value you. I'm like, whoa.
Yikes.
Like from the span of, I'm going to burn your house down. You're my best friends.
Okay. Yeah.
We've got like a fearful avoidant attachment person who's also got psychopathy patterns. And like, you know, yeah, he's no longer in my life and God help him, but I'm not going to help him. Sometimes you have to have the maturity to say, look, God help this person.
Yeah,
I ain't going to help you. I'm going to put my own oxygen mask on first and we're going to move past this relationship. So what is all this? Why am I talking about this? Well, energy just doesn't stick to people only. It affects everything around the people as well. So your dome, your space, if you can think about this just visually for a second, every room you walk into, you have a sphere around you that is walking in with you. And it's grabbing people, ideas, thoughts, and it's touching everything around you. And so we can develop the same attachment issues with non-human things, progress, notoriety, trophies, reputation, money, bank accounts. It's bigger than just people. It's everything around the people. Because one of the things you have to understand, we'll get into the implicate order of things, which is a Bohm quantum type thing. You have a blueprint inside of your entire life, including everything you own and everything you want and all of the money that you want to make. And this blueprint is energetic and it's communicating to these things. And they don't have sentience, but they are trained to follow instructions. And so when we develop attachment issues with how dangerous would it be if we're anxious attachment with progress? Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden we're like, if I don't see it right away, I got to run. I got to hide. What if we developed avoidance attachment with progress? Well, as soon as I start to see it, I got to shut it down and avoid it. And anything I was doing to create it, I've got to undo that and stop it. So we can develop the same attachment style theory with things in our life. Whenever we fall into the bottom of one of these attachment styles, it means our importance rating has been hijacked. What does importance rating mean? We're going to go through that, but it means how important something is for you to accomplish. Is this helpful so far? You want me to keep going?
Yeah, I love it, bro.
It's great.
How many of you have never heard anything like this before? And just be honest if you want. I'll take the feedback.
I've heard pieces of it, but I like the sequencing, the kind of the four different attachments. That's really cool because you can plug it in a lot of different areas about aspects of life and business.
Yeah, cool. Okay. Humans and self-sabotage, you can just almost push them together. So if you find a human and they've got, you know, like a nose and ears and eyes and a mouth and they can speak, they're a human being, a real human being, not like a robot, a transhuman, but a real human being with the mind, body, spirit, all that stuff. We're eventually going to have to get into actually delineation between what is a human.
For real.
One of our clients in chamber, she runs a business and it's AI training for humans. And I heard it and I thought about it and I was like, we're there. Mm-hmm. We have to specify whether the training is for humans or whether it's for machines because they're both learning. And they're almost learning the same way. What's the defining ingredient of the human mind? Neuroplasticity. Another way to describe neuroplasticity would be iteration. It just has the ability to iterate and change. What's the defining ingredient behind AI? Iteration. It can change. It can learn. So we're like, we're going to go... We're off. We don't want to go on the deep end yet.
Here we go.
Humans, a real human, will sabotage themselves based on what they are afraid of. So you look at the complexity rating of the mind, body, soul, and spirit, and it's complex by itself. If you have to describe what is the spirit, it's complex. What is the mind? It's complex. But when they integrate together, it gets nuts because there's a cumulative spiraling exponential effect to how the spirit impacts the soul. What's the soul? Is the mind, will, and emotions. How does the soul affect the body? This is the study of psychosomatics. Whenever you see the term psychosomatic therapy, what you're really reading is soul body integration and governance. How does the body react to the mind? And how does the mind react to the body? And how do we flush these changes out in a way that's helpful? And so when we build our self-worth, our anxious patterns go away. So if you're anxious avoidant, it's almost always a self-worth issue. If you are avoidant, all right, you're just avoidant attachment style, then it usually is a vulnerability issue. You're afraid of vulnerability because somewhere in your past, you were vulnerable and it hurt you. Someone left because you were a real human who struggled with something. Somebody who was supposed to be in your corner wasn't in your corner anymore. And so when we practice vulnerability, our avoidance behaviors go away. When we resolve the past and regulate ourselves consciously, oftentimes this regulation has to happen under duress. Our fearful triggers will go away. And so this affects us on this level because the importance is going to track back through why it's important to you. So if you've been betrayed, then success is way too important to you because you're using success as a way to cover vulnerability. So you just want to read through these and put yourself into them. The problem with all of the importance and burning desire is that it actually puts your desires into a threat category for the reticular activating system. So let's practice this for just a second. How many of you can think about something that you want really, really badly and make sure that it's not spiritual? Don't give me like, I want to be close to Jesus. That's a good thing. Keep it. But that will break this, okay? We're not going to go into the spiritual chassis of this right now. Something tangible that you really want, a business or a spouse or a relationship. Okay, just get it in mind. When this becomes too important, your brain doesn't think about, oh, this would be a nice thing to have. It begins to classify that thing as a threat. Here's why. If it's existential to you, the largest threat in your orbit is not getting it. Make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it takes it from the realm of just, I would like to have this thing, this would be awesome, to, oh my God, if we don't get this thing, we might physically die. The reticular activating system gets compromised, it gets hijacked, and it begins to look for any piece of data in your life that could say, hey, if we don't get this thing, we're screwed. So find everything in your life that could indicate that we're not going to get this thing. All right? This is an aha moment. This should be a wake-up call.
There's some light bulbs going on right now, bro.
You're not getting punished because you want something. Your reticular activating system, your being is like, if Greg Sugarman doesn't get this thing, it could compromise our ability to procreate. It could compromise our ability to do our job and perpetuate the species, protect our kids, all of these things. And we get this confusing soup of like risks everywhere, threat everywhere. And now we're self-sabotaging because we lack attribution. And so in an effort for the RAS to lower the threats, it begins to push everything away that falls into this category of what we want. Real quick, just to substantiate and back this up, studies on reward prediction error show that expectation without fulfillment causes emotional strain. How many of you know the verse in the Bible, heart deferred makes the heart, or hope deferred makes the heart?
Sick.
Sick. Hope deferred makes the heart sick. When was this written? 3,500 years ago, and now we're millions of dollars, and thousands of years later, we're like, yep, well, that's true. It's called the RPE. It's the reward prediction error. All this stuff is just literally stolen from scripture, but whatever. It reduces motivation and impairs our cognition. This literally means when something impairs our cognition, it means we become dumber. Now, not in a judgmental sense, not in a like, oh, you're dumb, you're smart, but in the sense of when our cognition is impaired, we can't think as quickly, we can't connect the dots as effectively, and so we lose our ability to navigate through life the right way. The brain codes disappointment, not just emotionally, but physiologically. This means that when the brain feels extreme disappointment, it registers in the same centers of the brain that register pain. Cingulate anterior cortex, I believe, is where the brain registers pain. So if I come to Leo, punch him in the freaking face, his cingulate cortex is going to flare up, and that's going to be on that. If Leo has a dream to write a book and he never fulfills that dream, the same region in his brain is going to light up whenever he thinks about it. So disappointment will kill you. It's the subjecting yourself over and over to physical torture. And why does this happen? Well, partially because of the RPE, and it lowers our ability to think well. It lowers and impairs executive function, which is our ability to make decisions between two different things. It lowers dopamine levels, and it creates a spiral. And anything that creates a spiral, you want to watch out for, because spirals are compounding. How many of you have had a bad Monday morning, and then before you knew it, it was a bad week, and then before you knew it, it was a bad month? And then before you knew it, you're halfway through the year and you're like, what have I done? Nothing. And it started from one day that you didn't catch that created a spiral. And all of a sudden, your whole life is a disaster. I have been through this.
It can happen quick.
I've been through this with multi eight-figure businesses, which is just a cascading spiral effect. One day we were good. I woke up 6 months later and we were not good because a spiral was created that wasn't caught. And what's another word for a spiral? It would be a cumulative pendulum. We talked about pendulums last week. Pendulums are great, but when one pendulum starts talking to another pendulum and they all team up together, this is what's happening in like the energy realm, where all of a sudden you're just spiraling down. Once your spiral is in motion, your desire doesn't go away, it becomes an addiction. We become fueled by this, except that the failure is part of the addictive loop. A person who wants something too much pushes progress away. As the progress is repelled, they find themselves wanting it more. And as they want it more, they repel it harder. And then over time, they become addicting to wanting and failing. They are addicted to failure. It is a neurochemical need for them to set a goal and fail, for them to plan a trip and cancel, for them to insert the blank. Why? Because a spiral was created, wasn't caught, the importance was never changed, and now they are addicted to how they feel, even though the feeling is not a good feeling. Okay?
Wild.
Nobody wants to be addicted to something. Addictions are not happy things. Like, we're addicted to all sorts of things like coffee, nicotine, and sugar, and all of this stuff. But you really don't want to be addicted to failure. Because when you become addicted to failure, it's part of your ethos. It's part of your identity. And we have to work to get this out. Yeah, there's a very, very good solutions for this. But first, it comes from the recognition that I have wanted something too much. And because I wanted it so much, like an opposite magnet, I've pushed it away. And I've now gotten caught in a pattern of years or months or weeks or whatever it is of pushing this thing away while still wanting it. Okay, think about your life in two categories. On one frame, we have what David Bohm calls the implicate order. This is the deeper hidden dimension. If you've studied consciousness, you've seen this before. It's like what this is powering consciousness studies today and bioenergetics. This is all coming from the same thing. David Bohm is the one who created it, or at least he created the theory. Implicate order is everything inside. So it's the hidden dimension. When you walk into a room, you feel different. Can you see it with your eyes? No. You can't. You can't see it. It's invisible. Now, 100 years ago, if we couldn't see it, we thought it didn't exist. Mm-hmm. But now we know that most of your life is invisible. Most of it. 95% of it. You can't see it with your eyes. You can observe the effects of it, but you can't see it. Everything here is the pre-realization. It's the pre-recognition on the tangible surface. Think of the implicate order as the folded or the invisible realm. The explicate order is the visible physical world, everything that is observed with our senses. So think of this as the unfolded or the seen realm. The explicate order is like a projection of a 3D hologram. The implicate order is the laser interference pattern that gets created through the projection. So think about Hebrews 11:3. What is seen was not made out of what was visible. Or if you read the old scripture, there's a verse in Hebrews as well. It talks about Abraham. Abraham trusted the invisible. He was credited faith because he trusted the invisible. They couldn't see these things, but they knew that it was there and they knew that it was real. There's a certain element of faith that's going to be required for you to implement a solution to these things. You can't do it without faith, because if it's seen, it doesn't require any faith. If it's invisible, it requires a lot of faith. The key that we have to really get through is to lower the importance of what we can see and raise the importance of what we cannot see. This sounds good in theory, but it takes some practice to do it. So let's practice real fast. I'm going to have you real fast in 30 seconds list out every goal, desire, or outcome that you're currently pursuing and rate it on a scale of 1 to 10 based on how much emotional charge you feel when thinking about not achieving it. So here's how you do it. I want to get a dog. Okay. What if you never get a dog? Oh my God, my life would be over. That would be a 10. I want to get a dog. What happens if you never get a dog? Don't really care. That would be a 1. Anything over a 7 is too important. There's not a quantifiable, like, what determines a 7, what determines a 6. There's not a mathematical function here, but what there is this feeling. So if you put a 9 on it, or if you put an 8 on it, then you feel a little bit too connected with it. And this creates unnecessary friction at best. It will actually repel the outcome at worst. So we have to reduce the number. We can do this consciously and through visualization. So this is exactly what these things will sound like. So this is a case study on this.
Yeah, it's really good.
It ties into an identity. Not being good enough would be an identity. And it will ripple into how that identity affects other people you care about. They all sound like this. Number one, it means something about me. Number two, it negatively means something about people that I care about. What does it mean to you if you do accomplish it? Likely the opposite, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly good enough,
and I can provide for my wife. Okay.
I prove it to others.
Yeah. We want to strip the meaning away from this thing to lower the number. And we'll have to practice this because our mind for 20 years, in your case, has been under the assumption that making 350 grand is the proof that you are good enough and you can provide for your wife. So we have to strip the meaning from that and replace it with something different. So the meaning that we would strip for it is making $350,000 a year just means that we can have fun.
That's a number.
Okay, this is like more fun, whatever. And says nothing about Greg as a human being. What does it mean if you don't accomplish it? Well, we can't have quite as much fun. We can still have fun, but we can't have it. This would be an example of how we would strip one and replace it with something different. And then visualize for just a second, take like 5 or 6 seconds. Let's imagine that this takes another 10 years for you to accomplish. And it's the best 10 years of your life. So that visualization was important. It takes another 10 years. That's a long time, bro. That's not what you want. You want it to happen next year or this year, right?
Yes, sir.
But it's the best 10 years of your life. What does the brain do with that?
It completely turns everything on its head. It's a complete reframe. There's a loss of charge very quickly.
Yeah. So now that number is like a 4. All right, so we'll keep going. One of the ways that we can train the brain to handle this is by focusing on what could happen if we don't get it. So that's what we were doing before. And then answering the imagination of what happens if we don't get it. So for example, let's say we switch out your, I want $350,000 a year. What if you said, I want $350,000 a year or something better? $350K a year or something better.
It felt tight and restrictive before. Now it's looser. It's not this, I have to have this or all of these bad things happen. It opens it up more.
Yeah, exactly. Because here's the deal. Anything you want that is at a 7 or higher is no longer a desire. It's a threat and you'll cap yourself at 350. Mm-hmm. You also won't handle delay well. It also will affect your identity and your self-esteem. So I want $350,000 or something better gives your brain the ability to practice agility and loosen up on whatever it is that we're giving. It also allows you to look at delays through the lens of, okay, well, this might actually be a good thing. If this takes me 4 years, maybe I'm going to get something better than 350. Maybe I'm going to get something better than this. Because when we actually go into the nuanced, really complicated, nitty gritty, if it were a dichotomy, you want your wife more than you want 350 grand. So what this is doing is it's actually removing a substance of the hierarchy and allowing yourself to just achieve whatever really you ultimately want, which the intuition and the heart are well trained on getting you to those places. So when something happens, some delay happens, some setback happens, I might be getting something better. That's what you want your imagination to fill in automatically, instinctively. But to do that, we have to train it. Okay. So here's the homework for this week. We're going to do these two things. Number one, practice gratitude for the things that you want. How do you practice gratitude? You picture yourself getting the thing that you wanted and you're like, this is incredible. This is amazing. And make sure the answer to the question of what does this say about you is nothing. If it says something about your identity, it's going to have a rating that is too high. The importance meter is too high. You're going to repel it. What you achieve doesn't say anything about you. And if it does, you're just going to fall into a pendulum, which we talked about last week. Homework point number two is setting clear intentions and then visualizing the or something better part. Okay. So for Greg, $350,000 a year or something better. Visualize the something better to release your grip on the goal and allow your mind to just pick up whatever is coming. Make sense?
Yeah, it's great.
Like, it reminds me of last week when we were talking about chaos and uncertainty. So it's allowing for that, and it's a beautiful thing and not something that needs to be feared. That's what's coming up.
We're going to capitalize on uncertainty. It's fuel. We're just going to become so anti-fragile, because if we get this, great. If we get something better, great. If we get something better and it takes a little bit longer and we end up getting four things instead, great. Whatever it is, great. Let's go. You'll notice similarities around every successful philosophy that actually works. And it's this release or this acceptance of progress, the way that progress is destined to unfold and to take place.